Hello, everybody. What's up? Welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in. Another edition of Truth Warrior here. I'm your host, David Whitehead, and I am joined by Rafa Condi, and he is a very interesting individual. I actually was introduced to him by Greg Swanson, who I did a previous show with. You can go and check that out. I think it's only about two or three episodes prior. You can go back and check out that show. But Rafa has a very, very interesting and very diverse background. He comes from the warrior tradition big time. He's got a huge bio that I'm going to let him break down for you. He's got two websites, forgingawarrior.com and manofwar.live. So Rafa, thanks a lot for joining me, man. This is awesome.
Hey, David, man, thank you. It's an honor to be here. Absolutely. I love to speak to other warrior-minded men. I'm all about that. And in this day and age, we need a definitely warrior-minded men out there like yourself. And I've read a lot about you, and I am on board with what you're doing, man.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. And it is good to connect. And we had a little introductory call the other day. And I was just blown away by your background, by, you know, the philosophy that you come from. You run your own academy, you run an online course, you've got all kinds of actual combat training. Why don't you let people know about your in-depth bio? Because I think it would definitely be of interest for people.
Well, I don't really like to talk too much about myself, but I do have a diverse background. I've been blessed with starting martial arts at a very, very young age. One of the most important aspects that was brought to me at 5 years old was going right into judo. I started training judo at a very young age, and I kind of went up the ranks that way. This was in Spain. That's where my father was studying medicine, and we kind of settled in when I was younger there. So it was pretty unique. At that time, Bruce Lee had passed away, but his movies were spot on. And I remember my father taking me to the movies, and I just got captivated by Bruce Lee. It was just mind-boggling. The effect that it did, that it had on me, was just unbelievable. So from there, for me, the martial arts became the core of my life, David, and I got to tell you that it without that, I would not be who I am today. So little by little, I continued training, about 13 years old is really when I dove in hardcore 100%. So I dove in and I started learning Hok Lun Kung Fu from Sifu Mai Kun, which passed away many years ago, but gave me so much. And we started training at such a classical and traditional level. A lot of it was from the Shaolin Temple, so we really went hardcore when it came to, you know, the philosophy and the mindset. And to me, that's what I was searching for at that time. So I trained there. I became a direct lineage student. And my path took me when he passed away, my path took me to the Japanese martial arts. And at that time, I had been captivated by Aikido. Basically, I had seen one of Steven Seagal's movies, which was Above the Law, that kind of just one of the intro scene just took me away. I was like, damn, film. I love it. And I was just, damn, you know, this is for me. So in around the time in the early 80s, that's kind of like when I broke away, and then I started learning and studying Japanese martial arts. I specifically went into Aikido, and then from there, I started going really hardcore and trying to find that warrior mindset. I was in that quest. So I started studying Zen Buddhism, I was under Philip Kaplow, studied with him for many years, and I went and I trained hard, and I kind of used that mindset and try to kind of figure out a way to implement it into my training. I was big time into the samurai, studied, you know, the Bushido code, and really tried to align myself to live with these virtues. Throughout that time frame, one of the main things that I wanted to do was apply what I was learning to my life, to all facets of my life. So I started undertaking, I started working on Wall Street. I did that for about a decade. I was a broker and, financial consultant, broker, and that was when Wall Street was very hot. So it was, I tried to apply the mindset to the sales aspect of business, and I was very successful. I managed millions of dollars, and you know, I had a nice cadre of clients. Now, about 15 years ago, the market kind of started turning sour, and then not only that, but I started seeing that I needed to do something more with my life, something more meaningful, a little bit more meaningful. So I decided to kind of put my hat down and say, you know what, I am going to be this person that I really want to be. I want to help others. I want to be hands-on. I want to go out there. I want to catch bad guys. I want to be that man. So what I did was I basically said to my wife, I had just gotten married. I had a young boy in her tummy at that time. She was pregnant, and she kind of looked at me, and she said, wait a minute. We have a great livelihood now. We are set, right? So we are set here in life, and but you want to go and you want to start making, you know, $40,000 a year being a cop and putting your life at risk. I said, this is for me. So she backed me up across the board, and my career has taken me, when I became a police officer, my career has taken me to very, very bad places, in the sense that I've seen so much. I started working for a city. I'd rather not name the cities one of the most violent cities in our state and even in the country. I saw so many things there. I kind of moved up to the level that I wanted very quickly. I started basically at road patrol, and then from there, I went to narcotics. I did a street team gig, and I went to narcotics, and then I was detached out to the DEA, to the county task force, and I became a police officer instructor. So I really delved deep into the heart of what law enforcement was about. And through that time, I fought for my life infinite times. I can't even tell you. And I have seen very, very ugly things. Gunfights, been involved in just you name it, and I can go on and on here. But one of the main things that through that time was so powerful in my life is having the martial arts there, and having that background. It really, for me, changed the perspective. And I believe, not to sound like an asshole, but I believe, hey, you know what? Everything that I do here and I brought to the table, I really believe that I was helping people, and especially going out there on the street and helping people. Like, I was that guy. I wanted to go out there and help people. And unfortunately, the police work nowadays is a lot different than when I started. Even though I'm a police officer still and everything, I could tell you I've shifted hats, you know, the way you do things. It's still a very dangerous position, but I was so blessed with having that hands-on approach, that proactive approach, that really let me implement that mindset, that warrior mindset, in every facet of police work. Now, not to take too much of the time here as my intro.
No, please.
But the most important aspect for me as a law enforcement officer wasn't just to be a cop. That wasn't anyone could go in and be a police. It was to be a very, very good and excellent police officer, someone that could really make an impact on the community, somebody that could really change the lives of others. And where I was working at the time, like I said earlier, it was a very violent city. And being that it was a violent city, you had to be spot on. Your tactical approach had to be spot on. Your mindset, your officer survival skills had to be spot on. So through that time frame, as I alluded to earlier also, I became a police instructor. I've been teaching at the police academy now for about a decade. I love it. I love bringing up young cadets. I love sharing my experience with them because, as you know, David, you can have all the experience in the world, but if you don't share it out there to the world, it's nothing. You know, you go to your deathbed with it. So to me, that was the most powerful part of this, you know, getting my experience and being able to translate it for these new recruits. Through that time frame, I decided to step up and do something outside the law enforcement world. I opened up my school 7 years ago. I've been wanting to open up a police, and a martial arts academy for years. And I said, it's time to bring my group together and get people around. And I did. I opened up a school, successful, knock on wood. You know, we have a very, very good reputation. We are a very structured school and have a great kids program, solid adult program. And that is my puppy. That is my baby. I have also, for the last decade, traveled all over the world. I've taught the military. I've taught law enforcement. I have taught all different facets of law enforcement and tactical, and from a tactical approach, knife fighting, gun fighting, tactical entry, hostage rescue. And a lot of these skills I learned prior, which I kind of missed, kind of overstepped here a little bit, but prior to law enforcement, I did security work. I did a lot of South America security work and kind of blended that in. I made the SWAT team a few years ago. And I had a stint there, learned a lot, and just kind of applied everything that I've learned in my career to teaching and kind of getting it out there. So here we are today, and what I have done is I have brought in all of my knowledge, all of my experience, and kind of put it on the table and said, we need men out here in this world. We need solid core warrior-minded men. And as you know, David, unfortunately, we don't have that in this world. Very limited. I would say less than 1% of men out there can really step up and say, I am a warrior-minded man that lives a warrior life, that lives a life that embodies the warrior spirit. So I decided to start Warrior Breed. I decided to start my podcast. I've had a million emails about people saying, hey, listen, you are a man that could actually lead the way. And it's not about me. It's just kind of leading others and grouping others and kind of networking and bringing that approach, that warrior approach. So we started Warrior Breed, which it's a company specifically. We have an online development program. We also do an assembly of warriors where we get men together and we put them through basically 4 nights of hell and 5 days, and we get them together and kind of break through their mindset and develop that warrior mindset. And of course, my podcast, Man of War podcast, which has been very successful. And I just want to thank my listeners. If they're going to listen to your podcast, which I'm sure they are, I want to thank them for all the support that they have given me.
Wow. All I can say is that's just incredible, Rafa, and I'm there's so many points I would love to talk to you about that. You've got such an incredible background, so much experience that's needed, and also coming from law enforcement, what was it about law enforcement that got you interested in going into that? Because you said it was the martial arts that started for you. You obviously were very motivated by the warrior mindset, and one of the biggest elements of the warrior ethos is the principle of justice, right? Justice in your personal life, justice in your family life, your community, and in the world. That's the whole concept. And also courage and bravery, right? So what was it about the law enforcement specifically that drew you to wanting to do it? You said you wanted to serve, but was there anything specific that really just pulled you into that?
Believe it or not, when I first started, my goal was to get involved in narcotics. That was my goal. Why? Because I saw kids dying. I saw kids overdosing. The epidemic of drugs was to the point where it was kind of mind-boggling. And I was lucky enough, fortunate enough to be part of a task force and get selected to be part of a task force where the president of the United States at that time literally brought it down and created it, because the counties that I was working in, Fort Lauderdale and Palm Beach County in South Florida, had the highest ratio of overdoses when it was the pill epidemic, the oxycodone pill epidemic. And it was a privilege of mine to work in that task force for 3 years in an undercover capacity, which I have cases that went national. CNN News and one of my cases where I worked undercover for almost a year. And it was, to me, to answer your question was really to get into the narcotics and that narcotics enforcement aspect to basically dismantle these organization, dismantle these drug dealers that are killing kids. That was my first and foremost thought. So the day that I became a police officer, David, I said, I am going to go out here and I am going to arrest bad guys, but my niche is going to be drugs. That was my niche. And I will tell you that I did pretty well because, you know, hundreds of arrests later, you know, I was selected to go into the vice team and then move there, move upwards to DEA as a task force officer and also in a task force for the county.
Wow. And so, as you know, you've been in the thick of it in all the different levels of military, military and also police. I would say you've trained at least people in those fields and SWAT and all of that. I would say you are very qualified to comment on the situation with law enforcement. There's a lot of people out there that have an impression of law enforcement, especially in America, and I know even in Canada more and more, where there's there seems to be, at least hitting the news or the discussion in the general milieu, is, well, we can't really trust law enforcement anymore. There's a feeling of distrust. And a lot of it comes from young people that are coming out of universities and colleges, and they don't really have the experience. They don't have the real world street experience to see what's really happening. We do know that there is obviously corruption that happens within law enforcement. Could you comment from that angle and just speak about that and maybe any experience that you have to show that, okay, there are maybe elements that have shown to be corrupt? I mean, you worked in drug enforcement for crying out loud. There's been many cases to come out with that. And then also how maybe there's a skewed perspective of law enforcement. It's maybe not a fair perspective in so many cases when it comes to the general public's perception of that.
Well, I'll tell you this, okay, and there are, I believe, nearly 800,000 police officers in the U.S. Less than 0.5% of officers out there get themselves in trouble. I believe the last statistic was like 0.43%, okay, are yearly getting themselves in trouble. Now, I'll tell you this much. I have worked with hundreds of other officers. Have there been corrupt officers here and there? Have there been individuals that maybe should not be police officers? I have come across them, no doubt about it. But David, the majority of individuals that I work with, I will tell you straight up, they are not bad people. They're very good people. They're devoted to what they do. There are people that they believe in helping. They believe in giving them themselves. Because remember, when we go out there and we serve, you know, we don't have that privilege to be able to say, hey, you know what, I'm not going to help you today because you are XYZ. You know, we don't have that. We can't judge others. And even though we're human, we still have to go out there with our mouth shut and serve. I can't tell you how many times I've come across police officers that are working, you know, 55, 60, 70 hours a week. And, you know, it's basically to keep their families afloat. And, you know, they go on and on throughout their career. And people just, for whatever reason, have this hatred towards police officers. And you got police officers that are working, you know, these hundreds. I mean, I would say probably 75% of the officers that I know out there work well over 60 hours a week. And that's not even including overtime. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
And they're putting their butt on the line for individuals. And the bottom line here, man, David, this is not what people are, you know. Unfortunately, we have a very, very sour sense of what police officers are and who they are. It's not, when you kind of break it down and you say officers get in trouble or they do things that maybe the public doesn't like, I will tell you 100% confidence level that the majority of these individuals kind of made it through the cracks. It's not the norm, you know, and you also have to kind of throw in the fact that when you're dealing with these individuals, with police officers, they're human. They are human beings. They're not superheroes that, you know, they can be thrown at, they can be spit on, they can be pushed around. You know, there is a breaking point. As much as your oath, you took your oath, there is a breaking point, you know, where, you know, you can't just let people walk all over you, right? There's also changes, you know, in the criminal field, the justice field, where you have different laws that are kind of being implemented that, to my opinion, are keeping law enforcement, they're keeping their hands behind their back. They're kind of tying them behind their back. And that is something that I kind of feel ashamed to say about my industry that I work in. And
it's funny you go there, because that's exactly what my next question was going to be, is how, I mean, because I get where you're coming from completely, Raf, and I have a great amount of respect for what you do and what I can't even imagine what that job is. And I think most people would not want that job. Most people are not psychologically or emotionally or physically balanced enough to be capable of going out and dealing with criminality or to understand the psychology of criminals. I've done a great deal of study personally, just out of my own personal interest, on criminal psychology, because I always grew up kind of like yourself, just motivated against injustice. Anytime I would see injustice, whether it be an instance just in my own personal life with somebody I was dealing with, whether it was in a workplace environment, or whether I saw it on the big geopolitical stage, or whether I saw it in my neighborhood with criminality or whatever, it rang me so the wrong way that was the big motivating factor for me to get involved in something like martial arts. So I love that you have that as your basis, because do you feel like that's something that you could bring in, or you have brought into training police officers that might be missing from the general curriculum of what they would otherwise be taught?
Yes, I believe that what we try to do is give the younger recruits that are coming through, we want to give them that mindset. We want to give them, for lack of a better word, you know, that warrior mindset, because that's ultimately what's going to make or break their career. Now, this job is a very difficult job to do. And I don't say that because, hey, you know what, it's my job and I want to say, hey, it's a difficult job. No, I say that from the bottom of my heart. I'm going to give you just an idea of what I can see in the day. I can see a dead baby that I did everything I can to resuscitate that baby, and it died in my arms. 15 minutes later, I can be called to a shooting and have a guy dying in front of me with his brains coming out of his skull. And he's there holding on to me while I wait for the medics. And I'm doing everything I can to save his life. 2 hours later, I might get a call to a school to counsel a young 12, 13-year-old that was caught with drugs either in school or his mom is screaming at him. Okay. Flip the hat, because now we have a domestic scenario where an incident happens where the man and the woman are screaming at each other. Man decides to hit the woman. Flip the hat, go further. Now we have shots fired in between this. Shots fired, you're there, you got to be first on scene. You have no idea what's happening except you're somebody shooting. You never know if it's at somebody else or up in the air. You never know that. Flip the hat again. Same. I'm talking about the same freaking day here. Flip the hat again. Now you have to go resolve a parking issue. Two neighbors or whatever it might be. Hey, this guy's parked in front of my, you know, my house for 2 hours and is blocking my driveway. Flip the hat. And I'm still in the same day here. Flip the hat. All right. Just to give you another basic example. Now you have Department of Children calling you because you have to go check, you know, on a case that was called in because the mother is neglecting their children. You go into a house, you have roaches and rats running around the house. The child, no diaper, sleeping on the floor, no food in the refrigerator. Okay. And I mean, you sit here and you say, well, I mean, this is just one day. And I could tell you that the order that I gave it to you in, it could change every single day. But I will tell you 100% that days like I just said right here have happened many times. All right. And that's not even including being involved in a gunfight. That's not even including, you know, a traffic stop that's gone bad. That's not even including chasing a stolen car that comes through your area, or a guy that robs a bank and you have to set a perimeter, or going out there and tactically have to go into a house because no one's opening the door, or being in different scenarios, getting called out. I'm a part of the hostage negotiation teams. So, you know, being called out. When I was in SWAT, the same thing, being called out for SWAT. I mean, so it's so much on the table that a police officer needs to be, and so many hats that he has to wear day in and day out, that this job is, it is a difficult job. No doubt about it, man.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that. And I think it's so important that people hear these kind of stories and speak to people like you, because most people's information is coming from second, third hand, or just observers, or people that aren't in the field. They don't have that experience day to day. And I think I just really wanted to give you the opportunity to share that, because I think it sets the stage for talking about the warrior mindset. And before we get on to that specifically, what would be your comment on a lot of the restrictions that you feel are being applied to restricting the most efficient form of law enforcement? Like, do you feel like right now, the way the legislations have come in, the restrictions that are applied, the red tape you guys got to go through, like, is that helping or is it hindering?
I will tell you from my personal opinion and what I have seen. Every time a law comes into place, it's not to benefit the officers. Typically, it's to benefit the criminal. And I'll tell you straight up, I'm a very raw and to the point guy, okay? It's always to help the other side. Very rarely does a law come in that helps police officers. Very, very rarely. As far as policy and procedures and departments, they have been tightening up for the last 5, 6, 7 years. Absolutely. For example, you know, my department, we wear a camera, literally. Everything we do, every time we have a citizen contact, we have to turn that camera on. You know, the brass claims, you know, and it's better for officers because there's less complaints and people can't complain. I do agree with that aspect. However, there's another aspect that is boots on ground. What happens is, especially newer recruits, that a lot of times don't do things that they should be doing because they're afraid that they'll be caught on camera. And what I mean by that is there are times where you will have to go hands-on to control the situation. There are times where you're going to have to escalate for officer survival, of course, and to dominate that situation that happens, and that mindset of being frightened because they might get caught on video, to me, that far outweighs, you know, somebody's going to come in and complain and they're really not saying the truth, so because of the camera. To me, that far outweighs that. The most important aspect, I don't give a damn where, it's officer safety. You come in, you're on duty, you do your best you can, you do your job, and you go home safe. You go home to your family. So, yes, to answer your question directly, I think the laws that are coming into this country, specifically, you know, the justice laws, are very, very, they're getting tighter as we go, and the police departments are also getting tighter as we go.
Well, we don't have to get too political here, but Donald Trump and his, you know, coming up to becoming president was saying that he wanted to really work hard to help enforcement, help law enforcement, and to bring these policies in to support, you know, this whole the situation. And he was speaking about it. Do you see anything in the pipeline, or have you felt like that things are turning around because of that? Or do you feel like it's just more of the same old?
I feel we have more support. There's no doubt. At the very least, now you can look back and say, you know what, I believe that there's actually somebody there supporting. Are we seeing changes as of now yet? No, we have not. But I want to believe that they will be forthcoming soon. I want to believe that some of these policies and procedures will kind of go back to a certain balance, that it's not just about, you know, the department covering their ass. It's about solidifying and protecting their officers also. So I do believe that because Trump is president, we will have a little bit more cushion as police officers. Yes.
Yeah, it's good that we talk about that. And I'd love to, I mean, Rafa, there's so many things we could get into. I'd love to have you on frequently to the show or at least another time, because these kind of discussions are important, especially today, and especially when we get into what I want to talk about with you next. When we talk about young men, okay, here we are, two men, fathers, you know, studying warrior tradition, trying to develop a warrior mindset and to encourage people to develop their warrior mindset. What do you see now that needs to be addressed the most? Because one of the things that I see is I feel like we're saturated in a victim culture, a victim mentality, where it's always about pointing the finger, passing the blame, not taking personal responsibility. And this is being encouraged from all levels, like from the media, in the education system, the way, you know, the schools are operating. And it's really starting to see, I see in the kids that I work with, because I teach all ages in martial arts, and I work with all kinds of groups of people from different demographics, different backgrounds. And I'm just seeing this weakening take a place, especially with young men. Can we speak about that? And what's your first sort of impression of that whole scenario?
How long is this podcast?
As long as you want it to be, man. I'm cool.
All right. So one of the main things that I see with children, and I'm going to try to speak in a very polite term here, is it's not the children. It's unfortunately, it's the parents. It's the upbringing, and it's more than anything, it has to do with the thought process. And like yourself, you know, I teach children also, but even the cadets that come through the academy, the younger cadets, you know, they still come from that same line, from that same mindset. And it's unfortunate, because what I have seen here, first and foremost, it has been the fact that sporting events, for example, any sporting events, I'm going to have to give you an example. You already have your mind made up. As someone that puts out a show or puts out a sporting event, you have your first, second, third place, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth, and tenth place. Okay. I don't believe in any type of trophies as far as outside first place and second place, and maybe third place. All right. But when you start giving, you know, when you start giving kids fifth, sixth, seventh, hey, Johnny did this, Johnny did that, hey, great, good job, hey, let's get awards for everybody. First of all, the kids are never going to develop a mindset, a very strong mindset. And forget about developing fortitude. It's not going to happen. So to me, the media, of course, but individuals that have a way of reaching out to the youth and making them stronger in the name of money, they have switched that, and they have made it now where, hey, screw the youth. I just want to have, you know, 150 kids in my program, and everyone's going to, you know, win out. Everyone's a winner. So I have a hard time with that. I have such a difficult time. Even with my own children, you know, I'm not about that, you know, 18th place award. You know, if you sucked it that day and you were not good that day, I am going to tell you. I'm not going to demean you, but I'm going to tell you, hey, listen, you sucked it. That's it. That's the bottom line. So anyone that comes through my program, as far as kids go, and I have had issues with parents at times, but for the most part, I lay the foundation down easy. Your kids will not move up in rank until they earn it. Bottom line, there is no, hey, sir, hey, you know, my kid has been a yellow belt for 3 months, and, you know, maybe I think it's time. There is none of that, because I will cut you off. Absolutely cut you off. The same thing with a cadet in the police academy. Hey, you know, I think that I should have gotten a higher score in this test or maybe in that test. No, the bottom line is that no, you shouldn't have. This is what it is. Now, obviously, as an individual, I consider myself an individual. I like to help others. It's not about, hey, breaking somebody down and leaving them down on the ground, right? Ideally, you want to be able to kind of boost their morale up eventually and kind of kick them in the ass and start saying, hey, you, and I'm a big believer, David, and you listen, an instructor is a guide. It's not somebody that's getting you from the, you know, pulling you up from the ground every single time. An instructor is a guide. So I try to guide my my students. I try to guide anyone that's learning under me. I give them the tools to be able to go out there and use it in their lives. So when kids are down, I might tear them down. I'm going to boost them up a little bit to get back rolling, and they're going to find their way. And that's when you truly start seeing children and young people develop, when they find their way. Not the daddy and the mommy handing them everything, but having them find their way. In my opinion, children in above the age of 5-6 years old should be put to challenge. There should be challenges in their life. Start showing them that overcome mindset. One of my friends, Jason Redmond, he's a Navy SEAL, have had him on my show. He talks about the overcome mindset all the time. I call it the warrior mindset. Same. You need to overcome that adversity. That's how the strength is going to be developed in children, and that's how they're going to develop to be good, solid men or women.
Thank you for saying that, Rafa. Holy crap. That is something that I've been speaking about for a long time. And I'm sure even in the martial art world, you've seen how people are just handing out belts like candy. The whole participation ribbon thing, I've never agreed with it. And we're living in an environment where there's a lot of, it's this helicopter parent syndrome. We used to talk about this in terms of hockey, you know, it was like hockey parents. I'm from Canada, right? So this is a huge thing here where, you know, the parents are standing there screaming at their kids and belittling their kids. And, you know, it was like this extreme reaction to a child not performing well. And so then everybody slowly started coming to this idea of, well, we should have this peaceful parenting thing where there's no influence at all. There's no criticism whatsoever, even though it should be constructive criticism, right? There should be none whatsoever. We should just be like, it's like delicate little pieces of china. This is what these kids are. But the thing is when you create that environment in their young, very easily influenced minds, they grow up without a spine. They grow up with no inner strength. And this brings up the topic of self-esteem. How is self-esteem cultivated? It's not cultivated by getting fake awards or getting fake feedback from your instructors or getting that. It's brought to you by authentic achievement, by you actually had to struggle to overcome, as you're saying. This is the warrior mentality. And I feel so many times like when I'm talking about this, because I speak to a diverse audience, I've done public talks, I've been around, I've taught martial arts seminars in different places in the world as well. And people are craving this, but it's as if they're afraid to speak about it because now it's this controversial subject. And that's crazy to me that this is the world we live in now.
It's gotten to the point now where even schools are creating safe spaces.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And I mean, I don't even know what that is really.
No, you're never safe. Come on.
So it's getting to a point, honestly, where it's just you're weakening the child's spirit. You're weakening their mindset. You're weakening them from the inside out. And that is a very bad, bad thing. And I wish parents will start realizing that, you know, you're not doing your child an injustice by putting them through challenges and letting them overcome those challenges. I am not, certainly not telling you to put your kids in challenges that they're going to fail at, okay? I'm talking about, listen, even as little as finding out how to tie their shoelaces, okay? Most kids can operate a freaking cell phone, man, okay? They know how to go on the computer. You know what I tell my kids? I say, listen, you know what? When you tie your belt, I tell them, you're going to get two times that I'm going to teach you how to tie your belt. Outside of that, okay, you need to figure it out yourself, because I am not going to teach you how to tie your belt more than two times. And I tell the parent not to tie their belts, and that is their uniform is their responsibility. So, and typically when I tell them that they're only going to get two times, they are pretty spot on remembering how to tie their belt. And for me, that little challenge right there, I believe it really starts changing them dynamically from the inside out. When my kids walk in, they don't just throw their shoes anywhere. It goes heels on the mat, you know, on the corner of the mat. If I see shoes thrown around anywhere, that's a negative. That is not happening in my dojo. They will step out in the middle of class. I will call them out, and they're going to go fix their shoes. Right, you know, folding the gis, super important after class. We don't just throw our gis in our bag, right? Typically, we want, especially with the adult program, I want to see my adults in Seiza on their knees, folding their gis, taking pride and honor on that uniform, right? Same thing as a police officer, okay? One of the most important things, and I'm kind of getting a little bit off topic here, but it kind of stems down to the same thing, is it's about being able to overcome and having that overcome mindset, and having that strong mindset of saying, hey, you know what? I can overcome anything, and I can handle things myself, and take pride and honor on those things. You know, your uniform as a police officer, boots should be cleaned and polished. All right. I mean, we call it a hard target in the security fields, you know. You become sharp, uniform pressed, you know, not stains. And we've all seen police officers with the, you know, with the belly over their belt and the gun, you know, halfway down their hip and, you know, wrinkly pants. In my world, that man's not a warrior. Sorry. And this goes, and I have all respect for my blue line brothers and sisters. Okay. But I will tell you as it is. Okay. The way you look and the way you carry yourself comes from challenges in life and being prideful and having honor in what you do. So, kind of stemming back to where we came from, I believe giving kids at a young age little challenges to overcome and be prideful and have honor in what they do are going to build them stronger to become stronger men with solid warrior spirits.
Well said, and great points. I mean, if you look at the samurai tradition and you read into the way that they cultivated discipline, and all warrior cultures had their way of doing it, but it's unique in the samurai tradition that they wouldn't just look at themselves only as warriors. They also looked at themselves as artists and people that contributed to their society and contributed to creating culture. And so when every little moment, they called it like, you know, you're living in that moment. Your life is contained within every breath and every action. So whether you're serving tea, whether you're cleaning up your kitchen or you're after your meal, or the way you even eat your meal, the way you sit, the way you stand, the Japanese culture is very, very particular in those details. And people of the West would be like, yeah, whatever, just throw, you know, why are they so particular like that? Well, it's about having a clean, disciplined, competent mind, right? So it reflects everything of who you are. You can't just be only disciplined when you're on the mat. You also have to be disciplined in all the very small things in your life. That's where it really counts. So I really admire the way that you bring that into your class, especially with young people, because I think a lot of parents today don't really know how to parent. They don't know how to integrate these things into their child's lives. And as a parent of two young girls, I'm always in that position of trying to learn more and more about what the most effective way is. But I do take from my martial art background and say, well, I know what works
when it
comes to training kids on self-defense, self-esteem. So I can bring that into even just the little things, keep your room clean, et cetera, right?
Absolutely. 100%. And that's, if you can instill that in your children, and let them kind of implement it to all facets in their lives. I mean, you've hit a home run. I mean, that is the way that you need to raise kids. And one of the things that myself, I have learned so much from the individuals that I've had on my podcast, you know, so many diverse backgrounds, and, you know, these guys are on top of their game. The beautiful part about it is that when you talk to them about children, I mean, it's the same that we're talking about now. There is no difference. They agree and they all believe in what we're talking about here. And it's for me, the core aspect to raising children is, of course, love, absolutely. But more importantly, even than love, is giving them the opportunity to grow. And you impede that by giving them handouts day in and day out.
I couldn't agree more with that. And I mean, I've often used the example of struggle, you know, like really the warrior way is the way of struggle. The samurai used to call it the way of death. You know, they looked at it very differently than most people would look at it. But the idea is that you were born through struggle, right? Like I watched both of my daughters born. My second daughter was a home birth. I watched the whole thing. And that's not a ponies and rainbows scenario. That is not an easy situation. Just to be born into the world, it was a struggle. But what did that struggle produce? It produced life, right? And when you watch that's nature, right, and observe nature, this is why I highly respect your background in Zen, in the Zen philosophy, because this is all about reflecting back on the external nature and the internal nature and trying to correlate the two. And you look at nature and you realize that all of the beauty that we see in nature is produced through struggle. And it's not just there for us to trash and to abuse and to take advantage of because it's beautiful. It came to be the same way you came to be. And if children could understand this, I don't think we would see all the littering and all the graffiti and all the just disregard for nature. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, I agree. And staying on the subject of nature, one of the biggest, most enlightening experiences for me was after I did a sesshin, which is a retreat, a Zen retreat. This is actually a one that was a shorter one. It was only 3 days, but basically you have a communal experience. Basically, you're sitting meditation for hours in the morning, midday, at night, and you don't really talk at all. You eat, you rake the garden, and basically you set up your meals, and it's just basic silence throughout the entire 3 days. It's a cleanliness of mind. It gets you to the level of mushin, right? That state of no mind. So when we talk about that state of no mind, and when we start getting to that state, we have heightened levels of, you name it, we have heightened levels of touch, of seeing, of feeling, of understanding. So for me, one of the biggest enlightenments, one of the most touching things that ever happened to me was after this retreat, after this session, I literally walked out. And the last day, I walked out to my car, and I never forget driving home, and everything that I heard, because it was different sounds that I hadn't heard for a few days, was magnified times 10. The engine of the car, the smell of the fume of the car, me driving, the equilibrium of me sitting on the car seat. When I walked out into my house, I opened the door. Everything was so different. I could feel it, smell it, touch it in such a much, I guess for lack of a better word, had that clarity of everything that I did. Everything was so crystal clear. And it lasted maybe for a day, about 24 hours, and then after that, it kind of fades away. You go back into the regular rhythm of life. But it was an experience where you can see truly where we're only using such a small portion of our mind and our spirit.
Yeah, it's true. And that same experience has also been recounted by people that have had near-death experiences, or people that have been in combat scenarios, or people that have been in survival scenarios. When I spoke to Greg, he was telling me about his surviving an avalanche, and that experience really awakened something like that in him as well. And I've had my own experiences that you almost feel like you're in a lucid dream, and like it's way more lucid. You can, like you said, your senses are heightened. And in a lot of the martial arts, this is the whole point, is to cultivate that. And get into that state of mushin, that no mind. And that when we say no mind, I mean, as kids, when my sensei would say that, we would kind of make fun of it, you know? We're like, what does that mean, no mind? But, right. But when you really think about it, what they're talking about is reducing that chatter, the chatter that comes from the ego, that chatter that comes from that part of you that's constantly interfacing with the external world and the people around you. And, you know, you create a persona, right? And we create a persona, right, that we use to interface with people and with life. But when you really think about it, we're more connected to that persona and we're less connected to our true authentic nature. And so when you're bringing down, you're kind of bringing down the veil a bit by doing those meditative practices, or even in martial arts, that's a physical form of meditation, right? You're using your body and movement to bring about that same type of experience. You're coming into a place where you're understanding who you are. So when we keep saying that, you know, find out who you really are, it's not just a bunch of mushy words and terms. We're talking literally here, that there's a methodology of training that can help you actually understand the depth of your nature. And when you find out your nature, you're going to find out your potential. You're going to find out who you are and what you're capable of. And when you know what you're capable of, you're not going to be in that place of feeling like a victim anymore, because you now realize that, hey, I can, it starts from, like you said, I can tie my own belt. I can tie my own shoelaces. I can think for myself. I can get resources for myself. I can go out and there's so many people that I've seen change from these meek little cowardly people into warriors. I've seen it happen. This is what I do, and it's what you do. And it's got to be one of the most enriching things you can be a part of. And it's so important today. I can't overemphasize how much we need more of this today. Would you agree?
Oh, I would agree. I would agree 100%. I mean, that is my life's work right now. It is trying to get together men that want to change their lives, that want to transform their lives, that want to be able to be battle ready for the game of life, as I call it, to be there, to be spot on. It takes a lot more than just, you know, saying, hey, you know what, I'm reading a book or I'm studying something on the internet, or it takes a lot more, man. We talk about actions, right? We talk about actions. Samurai, you know, it's about Kaizen, right? They're the mindset of constantly doing and moving forward. And it's about that transition of mindset. If you don't have that mind shift, because it's not really a mindset. If you don't have that mind shift, we're shifting literally from the way you were thinking to the way you are thinking now. And if you don't have that mind shift, you're going to stay back there and you're going to basically live your life, hands folded, come across, and do nothing with your life except live it from your day one to day two in that mode of emptiness. Unfortunately, we see this all the time. I'm sure, David, you see this all the time, where you have men out there, man. I mean, that you're like, dude, like, wake up, man. Like, wake up.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know what I'm saying? Like life is a lot more than just kind of just coming home, eating, you know, and going to bed, and then same thing tomorrow. We need that life. We need warrior-minded men, because how we're going to cultivate that warrior spirit is not going to be through me and through you. It's through the people that we train, right? It's going to be that tribe that actually believes in that. That's how we have to do it. If we don't do it any other way, we're going to keep this to ourselves, and it's just going to die out, because it has been dying out, no doubt about it. At least for 10 years, I have seen a monster drop off in what I call warrior-minded men.
Oh, I've seen the same thing, and it's turned my stomach the whole way. And it's at a point now where we're in a state of confusion, and maybe that state of confusion is going to be needed to reawaken and get back to the source of things. And I feel like that's where I when I hear people now, as I do have conversations with young men especially, and I try to talk to them, and I'm like, you know, where are you really at? Like, what do you think about this? I try to get them telling me their opinion about social issues, political issues, music, whatever, right? The arts. And I get this feeling that even they know deep down that something is radically missing from their lives, and they don't know what it is. And like you said, if there's not people like us out there to educate and to say, hey, this is what's missing, the foundation of strength and fortitude and courage and all the virtues. You spoke about the virtues of the samurai and the Bushido code and whatnot. And I've often covered, it's a universal pattern that you see, whether you're studying the noble virtues of a satru from the Celtic tradition, or you're going into the Sikh warrior tradition and their nine virtues, or the Native American tradition, or on and on you go. It's a universal pattern of how to cultivate a society that's strong, or at least a community that's strong. And without those things, you can't be strong. And so if people go along, and these young people today just go along with the current, the pop culture, the current way that people are going, they're moving further and further away from the foundation of their own being, in my opinion, because it's just been so, it's being misrepresented in such a way that it's, I think a lot of people, they don't even know what way is up. There's that confusion like I'm talking about. So to clear up confusion, I mean, you've studied Zen, you've shared some experiences of you know, meditation and training and things like that. What advice would you give to young people that might be watching this, that might feel like it's hopeless for them, that you know, their self-esteem is so low that they feel like they'll never be able to get to that level of awareness? What would you say to encourage those people?
First thing that I would say is find something to do that is going to motivate you and inspire you daily. All right. Typically, I would urge you to consider some type of physical activity. All right. Martial arts, to me, is something so different and unique than any other sports. Now, you can take different aspects of dance, of course, different aspects even of, you know, sporting events. Like, for example, you talk about tennis and hockey, you know, football, all those great sports. But martial arts has something very different. I believe that if you can give martial arts a try and find yourself a good instructor, that's going to be a first stepping stone in starting to transform your life and starting to transform your mindset. The next thing that I would say is, and this is, I would definitely put this very close to one, is read and study. Read books, right? You want to be able to be knowledgeable and absorb good, solid information about, you know, go out there, research writers that inspire you and motivate you. Man, I've been reading books, 40 something years, every single night. My wife yells at me because I'm reading and reading and reading, but I read, I absorb day in and day out. That's what I like to do. And for a younger person that's coming up, reading is crucial. So much to learn, so much to learn. But none of that is going to be worth anything without taking actionable steps. You have to do whatever you're studying and you decide to move, you have to do something for it. You got to take that step. You have to challenge yourself daily. You have to go beyond, and this is the key word here, you have to go beyond your self-imposed limits. If you don't go beyond your self-imposed limits, you are going to stay saturated on a flat line, and you're not going to better yourself. So you got to step up, young people, and you have to push yourself at every single day, whether it's running a mile in a little bit faster, pushing some weight, training harder in the martial arts, you know, reading a little bit more, taking notes, whatever it might be, improve yourself daily. I promise you, you lock this down and you make this a habit and you make this part of your life, your discipline is going to come along with it, your confidence, your courage, your mindset. And you're just going to be a much stronger person.
Well said. And all I would add to that is that when you have that foundation, think about where you can now go. The places where you felt limited before, you're now not limited there anymore. You can now start having that belief system. And it's not even just a belief. It's something where you know. It's about inner knowing. If you've gone through challenge before, you can go through challenge again. And nothing worth having comes free. Nothing is free. Nothing comes just given to you. And I feel like a lot of young people today, they're especially coming out of the year, what's going on in the universities today, where it's like there's this, you know, hand me handouts. Let's have it given to me. I'm owed something. I'm a victim because of my race or because of my gender or because of my upbringing or because of my social status. I'm a victim. So society owes me. No, society doesn't owe you. You owe yourself. And if you can take that confidence level that you're talking about, Rafa, and you can translate that into actionable steps, as you're saying, and you have a goal, you got to have some kind of vision, some kind of why behind what you're doing. If you have that and you can get that down, you can accomplish whatever you want. You can realize that you can become self-sufficient. You can become an individuated person. One thing that Bruce Lee was often talking about was the importance of realizing that, you know, you're either self-made or you're made by the herd. You're made by all the influences around you. And it's important to have good influences in your life. But if you don't take that personal responsibility into your own life and take those steps to build you, then you're not going to know who you are. And if you're a person that doesn't even know who you are, then you're going to be led very easily by other people and the forces of nature and the forces of history that are happening right now. So I just wanted to echo that and bring that out. And with your course, Rafa, is this kind of the, maybe we can talk about that a little bit. Is this where you go with people? Is this what you help them with?
Absolutely. I mean, basically, it's our course, our online course is all of my knowledge, all of my experience broken down into step-by-step structure and lessons. So we have modules and lessons, and literally, I mean, I baby step you, I walk you through what it is to become a warrior. And I mean, it's my heart and soul right now. I've put into it hundreds of hours, and you know, knock on wood, is doing very, very well. I mean, the feedback that I'm getting is, listen, people, they're changing. They're changing because they didn't realize that there is things, there's touchy-feely things that they can do to change the way that they think and the way that they carry themselves, the way that they act, the way that they understand information. So this warrior breed to me has been a life changer in every aspect to me. I have met individuals from all over the world. People have stepped up to me and said, hey, listen, you know, you need to do this, you know, in a grander scheme. At this point in time, I'm not ready to do that yet. I have my tribe. I'm kind of keeping it to my tribe, and we're still growing every single day. We're getting new members. The Assembly of Warriors, which is a 5-day, 4-night retreat for men. It is all about developing your warrior mindset. We're talking about mountain hiking, we're talking about canoeing, challenges, everything from knife fighting to hand-to-hand combat to firearms training. We're talking about, you know, zip lining obstacles. We're talking about skydiving. We're talking about, you know, everything you think that you've ever done, we're going to do this tenfold. So it's about developing the mindset, man. We're going to get, our next one is upcoming in March. Late Feb, March. I don't have the exact date yet, but we're going to be doing this most likely in the mountains of Georgia. And we're going to be doing this with, you know, hopefully somewhere in the neighborhood between 16 and 20 men as it stands. And we're going to take them through an entire process here of warrior development. And we're going to be staying out in the mountains, and it's going to be, I'm so excited because I've never done it out in the mountains like that. It's I'm on board with this 100% when it was brought to me.
Wow, man, you're getting me excited. I may have to check this out. That'd be pretty cool. Maybe we can come down and document some stuff or something, but we can talk to you a little bit more about that. But I love that. I love that you're giving people something that's for everybody online, where you can come in and you can learn these steps. And then you're also giving a practical solution too, to say, hey, come on out. We're going to show you what it is to live like a warrior. That's very unique. I haven't heard of a lot of these types of things out there. And especially from someone like yourself that has that kind of diversity of background and knowledge and expertise. So I definitely applaud you with that and encourage you to do more of that. And aside from that event, do you have anything else coming up? Do you have a book coming out or anything big you want to announce?
I have been in the process of writing a book. I probably about 30% through that book. I actually just started a couple of months ago, and we're hoping that by the end of the year here, we'll have a release date. 2018, not 2017, next year. So yeah, I'm really very, very specific on what I write in that book. I want this to be unique. There's been way too many books written about the warrior mindset and the mind itself. So I want this to be very unique and very specific to what my mission, what my vision is also. So I'm looking forward to that. Currently, if you go to warriorbreed.co, which is our Warrior Breed main website, you could find all our programs there. You could also go to manofwar.live, which is my podcast. And those two kind of combine each other. The idea is to get men motivated by listening to the podcast and then having them step up and take action by joining the Warrior Breed movement. And I believe at this point in time that any man that wants to do something, whether it's with a program like mine or another program, you know, bottom line is this: I really believe it in my heart and soul that anyone, and like you said earlier, Dave, that for the most part, you can take people that don't have a concept or an idea of what being a true warrior is and change them. You can absolutely do it. I've done it. And even though it's a little difficult because there are so many things you got to kind of put in structure, but it can be done. And the difference here is we're not talking about making or transforming men into men. We're talking about going up that ladder one step further, transforming men into warriors.
It's amazing, man. I'm so glad I found your work, Rafa. This is just great. I really love chatting with you. And just to wrap things up here, what would you say to people that are already on the warrior path, people that are training, maybe they're training in martial arts? I got a lot of people that are from, you know, jiu-jitsu backgrounds and martial art backgrounds that tune into this show. What would you say to people that are already training? What are some tips and little bits of advice that you could give them, or even people in law enforcement or firearm safety? What would you say to those people?
All right, so right off the bat, one of the things is going to pop up, and is we have a lot of discussion about which martial art is better, and you know, karate can beat this, and jiu-jitsu can beat this, and when we get a wave of, especially nowadays, I'm seeing a lot of BJJ guys, this martial art doesn't work. You know, you have even Navy SEALs coming out there and saying, oh, this is not all right. Let me just cut all bullshit aside right here, okay? Because I've been there and I've done that, and I've been in fights for my life. There is no such thing as a perfect martial art. So if you're training and you're a martial artist and you have that warrior mindset, do not get caught up in that. You can prefer and enjoy and like a martial arts that fits you better. Go for it. Absolutely. But remember, it's about how you train. It's about your mindset, right? We can sit here and talk about, you know, a sport martial arts versus a contact martial arts versus a throwing martial art and all that. It doesn't matter. Gentlemen, on the street, in the real world, I'll tell you straight up, you have to have a balanced game. It's not about being, especially when I talk to law enforcement officers, you know, there's a trend coming into the community of law enforcement officers, which is jiu-jitsu, which is great. Don't get me wrong. I studied jiu-jitsu for a lot of years, and most of my judo has to do with groundwork. I'm a big ground believer. I 100%. But not everything, especially in the law enforcement world, you have to be going to the ground. There is a standing game also. You have to develop both sides, right? So I recommend for those individuals that train martial arts day in and out, day out, to balance your training and to just have that mindset, that warrior mindset, and develop that, man. That should be what you're honing, right? Doesn't matter. Stop picking on other martial arts. Doesn't matter, okay? Have respect and honor and put your virtues in place, because unfortunately I'm seeing a lot of these MMA places. Just, I don't even want to go there.
Okay. I agree, but, man. Yep.
Okay. So keep your head in the game and understand that if you really want to be a warrior and live a warrior life, fighting in the ring, I mean, you're not a warrior by fighting in the ring. I'm telling you straight up, because I've seen them day in and day out, professional fighters, get their ass kicked by a crackhead in the corner. Okay. One Coke bottle across the head, a glass bottle. Okay. You're out. One gunshot in the back of your head. You're out. So understand and live a warrior life. Understand that you are not invincible, okay? And you got to have that development of that warrior mindset. Now, when we talk about firearms, you know, especially firearm safety for anyone that wants to carry, and understanding that, hey, guys, a gun put in the wrong hands can be deadly. With that said, I will tell you, there are no guns that fire themselves. Guns don't kill people. Bad people with guns kill people. So the mentality needs to be completely different. All right. You, if you own a gun, be safe with it. Make sure you store your gun properly at your house. If you carry your gun with you, make sure that you understand how to deploy your gun in combat. There is a big difference between having your gun and knowing your gun, okay? Having a gun is one thing. Knowing your gun and knowing how to run your gun is a completely different element. Please train hard, train safely, get your fundamentals down, and understand that a gun placed in the right hands could save lives.
And that's a great point to make, because I actually just recently completed my firearm safety course, and this was right after, it was literally the weekend of the Las Vegas shooting. I was sitting there being trained by he was former RCMP in Canada, former detective, former CSIS. Like, he was like, he's been there and done that in Canada, older gentleman, and he's a hunter and a gun collector now. And I was asking him right out of the gate, I asked in front of the class, I said, well, now on the table is this idea of restricting firearms and, you know, going after the right to bear firearms and all that in America because of these shootings. And right off the bat, he went into like a 30-minute rant on it, where he was saying exactly what you just said. He's like, the conversation needs to be understood about education and about understanding that whether it's a gun or whether it's an axe or whether it's a vehicle or whether it's stuff that's under your kitchen sink that can be used to make explosives, bad people will find ways to kill good people. Okay, people that want to do harm will find a way to do it. And with firearms, there's also a black market of firearms. A lot of firearms that are used to commit crimes are illegal firearms, and they're from people that they're out there in the criminal world. And a lot of the accidents that happen with firearms, which contribute to death, come from people that are not educated about it. So it goes to the same thing with martial arts. You can just grab some punk off the street and teach them how to fight and teach them some very dangerous techniques, but that person could then become a weapon and go out and commit violent acts. Same thing with a firearm, or same thing with anything. So I love that you bring that element to it of making it a much more logical discussion than what I think is happening currently politically with this.
Yes, absolutely. And firearm safety is crucial. One of the things that I teach in my firearms course is understanding that your gun can be used, obviously, against you also. Right? I mean, understanding how to retain your weapon in combat, because unfortunately, and I do, certify and qualify a lot of security guards that they come around once a year, and when they shoot their guns, you can tell that they've never handled their guns at all. You know, it stays in their holster. So as a civilian with a concealed weapons permit and you have it, make sure that you learn firearm safety. Understand that you should never point your gun at anything that you do not wish to destroy. Understand that you keep your finger off that trigger until you are 100% committed and ready to fire. You know, making sure that if you are in a range, that you follow the range instructor's commands and you know, their policies, whatever it might be. Don't turn around with your gun, muzzling it, other people. We don't want that, right? At home, make sure that you store your gun in a safe place. Keep it away from children's reach, right? I've seen many accidents where children reach, find a gun, and they're not good, okay? So, and last but not least, make sure that if you do get into a gunfight, that you just don't shoot randomly. You have to remember there's a backdrop, right? There's always a backdrop. So your target might be here, but if there are kids in the background and other people, are you truly that good to take the shot, center mass, and hit that person? Have you trained? So everything comes into play. You know, it's not just good enough to have a firearm. You have to train with a firearm, become comfortable with the firearm, let it become you, as I say. And that's the advice that I can give to your listeners right now. Become one with your firearm.
Very good. Very important. And maybe final to just finish off here, Rafa, we've mentioned it a little bit throughout. We've talked about the context of it, but what would be your favorite piece of philosophy from martial arts, the philosophical side of things? It's so good. We have to learn the practical, especially when we're trying to understand what it is to learn about self-defense and be effective in these situations. But what about the philosophy? Maybe we'll finish with your final points on that.
To me, the martial arts in general, and even life in general, has the philosophy of clarity of mind, clarity of vision, and clarity of mission. Without these three components, your mind itself and your whole being will be completely out of equilibrium. So in essence, you're going to be building your body, your mind, and your spirit, and you're going to be connecting them. Without that connection and that balance and that clarity of, again, mind, your entire being, we talked about that earlier, your entire being is just going to flatline. You're going to be in one straight line throughout your entire life. And I don't know about you, but I don't know that many people that are in this world that just want to flatline. Many of them just don't know how to get a heartbeat on that flatline, right? So my advice to anyone that wants to get a little bit of a beat, start doing things day in and day out. And when it comes to the philosophy aspect, understand that philosophy, in my opinion, has a very, very close line. I mean, we ride it right next to each other with spirituality. All right. In the depth of philosophy, you're going to find that there is interlacing concepts and principles that are spiritual. So my goal in everything that I do and the information that I disseminate is understanding that philosophy itself cannot exist without the balance, as I said earlier, of that body, mind, and spirit backing that philosophy up. The goal and the mission of every human being should be to be in this planet to serve. In my opinion, if you don't have that, there's other things in your life that are missing, key components. All right. So the simple philosophy is to give of yourself. If you give, I promise you, and this is what I tell everyone, it's a funny world, but if you give, you're going to get back. If you truly give without asking, you're going to get back. And you're going to get back tenfold. And you're going to get back such a great, the feeling of giving and then at some other time in your point life, getting something back, it's so unbelievable because you know that you've given everything. And when I lay my head at night like this on my pillow, I want to say to myself, have I truly given everything that I have today? Have I really truly given everything that I have from my heart today? And I want to do everything that I can in my life to be able to put my head to bed saying yes to that answer, to that question every single day. That's my take on philosophy there.
Wow, beautifully said. I really appreciate it. And well, Rafa, I can't say enough about how thrilled I am about having you on the show. I'd love to do follow-ups with you in the future. I'm going to post all of your links as well for people. So those that are listening, you can go and check out Rafa's websites, check out his programs, definitely check out his online course at the very least. And you got your upcoming book. So feel free, when that comes out or you have anything else coming out, send it my way. I'd be happy to blast it to all of my people. So thanks again for coming on. It's been a true pleasure, mate.
Thank you, David. And it's been an honor having you, definitely being on your show and you having me on. I mean, it's awesome. All right. You're doing some wonderful things out there. Keep up the good work. You know, keep your head up. I know that there's probably going to be people out there that are trying to get you down day in and day out because, you know, not everyone believes in the warrior way, but men like yourself, I'm glad to see that you can step up and you're out here and good luck with your show, man.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it.